But I could see, too, that she was relieved that Fanny was sitting in the kitchen beside me. That meant something very important, and she knew it. It would have been a very different scene, and she would have been in a very different trouble if I had come upstairs alone. "I'm sorry, Mrs. Rivers," Fanny said. "It's all my fault. I hadn't seen Tish for a few weeks, and we had a lot to talk about. I had a lot to talk about, and," he gestured, "I kept her out." "Talking?" Sharon asked. He did not quite flinch. He did not drop his eyes. "We want to get married," he said. "That's how come I kept her out so late." They watched each other. "I love Tish," he said. "That's why I stayed away so long. I even," he looked briefly at me, "went to see other girls. And I did all kinds of things to kind of get it out of my mind." He looked at me again. He looked down. "But I could see I was just fooling myself. I didn't love nobody else but her. And then I got scared that maybe she'd go away or somebody else would come along and take her away, and so I came back." He tried to grin. "I came running back. And I don't want to have to go away again." "Then, she's always been my girl, you know that. And I am not a bad boy, you know that. And you're the only family I've ever had." "That," Sharon grumbled, "is why I can't figure out why you calling me Mrs. Rivers all of a sudden." She looked at me. "Yeah, I hope you realize, miss, that you ain't but 18 years old." "That argument," said Sis, "and a subway token will get you from here to the corner, if that far." She poured the coffee. "Actually, it's the older sister who is expected to marry first, but we have never stood on ceremony in this house." "What do you think about all this?" Sharon asked her. "Me? I'm delighted to be rid of the little brat. I never could stand her. I could never see what all the rest of you saw in her. I swear." She sat down at the table and grinned. "Take some sugar, Fanny. You are going to need it, believe me, if you intend to tie yourself up with my sweet, sweet little sister." Sharon went to the kitchen door and yelled, "Joe, come on out here. Lightning's done struck the poorhouse. Come on now, I mean it." Fanny took my hand. Joseph came into the kitchen in slippers, old corduroy pants, and a t-shirt. I began to realize that no one in this house had really been to sleep. Joseph saw me first. He really did not see anyone else. And since he was both furious and relieved, his tone was very measured.
"I'd like you to tell me exactly what you mean, young lady, by walking in here this hour of the morning. If you want to leave home, then you leave home, you hear? But as long as you in my house, you got to respect it. You hear me?"
Then he saw Fanny. And Fanny let go my hand and stood up. He said,
"Mr. Rivers, please don't scold Tish. It's all my fault, sir. I kept her out. I had to talk to her. Please, Mr. Rivers, please. I asked her to marry me. That's what we were doing out so long. We want to get married. That's why I'm here. You're her father. You love her. And so I know you know, you have to know, that I love her. I've loved her all my life, you know that. And if I didn't love her, I wouldn't be standing in this room now, would I? I could have left her on the stoop and run away again. I know you might want to beat me up, but I love her. That's all I can tell you."
Joseph looked at him.
"How old are you?"
"I'm 21, sir."
"You think that's old enough to get married?" I don't know, sir, but it's old enough to know who you love.
You think so?
Fonny straightened. I know so.
How you gonna feed her?
How did you?
We, the women, were out of it now, and we knew it. Ernestine poured Joseph a cup of coffee and pushed it in his direction.
You got a job?
I load moving vans in the daytime, and I sculpt at night. I'm a sculptor. We know it won't be easy, but I'm a real artist, and I'm going to be a very good artist, maybe even a great one. And they stared at each other again. Joseph picked up his coffee without looking at it and sipped it without tasting it.
Now let me get this straight. You asked my little girl to marry you, and she said...
Yes, said Fonny.
And you come here to tell me or to ask my permission?
Both, sir, said Fonny.
And you ain't got no kind of...
future. Fonny said. Both men again then measured each other. Joseph put his coffee down. Fonny had not touched his.
What would you do in my place? Joseph asked.
I could feel Fonny trembling. He could not help it. His hand touched my shoulder lightly, then moved away.
I'd ask my daughter. If she tells you she don't love me, I'll go away and I won't never bother you no more.
Joseph looked hard at Fonny, a long look in which one watched skepticism surrender to a certain resigned tenderness, a self-recognition. He looked as though he wanted to knock Fonny down. He looked as though he wanted to take him in his arms. Then Joseph looked at me.
Do you love him? You want to marry him?
Yes. I had not known my voice could sound so strange. Yes, yes. Then I said, I'm very much your daughter, you know, and very much my mother's daughter. So you ought to know that I mean no when I say no, and I mean yes when I say yes. And Fonny came here to ask for your permission, and I love him for that. I very much want your permission because I love you, but I am not going to marry you. I am going to marry Fonny. Joseph sat down.
When? As soon as we get the bread together,
Fonny said.
Joseph said, You and me, son, we better go into the other room.
And so they went away. We did not say anything. There was nothing for us to say. Only Mama said after a moment, You sure you love him, Tish?
You're sure?
Mama, I said, why do you ask me that?
Because she's been secretly hoping that you'd marry Governor Rockefeller, Ernestine said.
For a moment, Mama looked at her, hard. Then she laughed. Ernestine, without knowing it or meaning to, had come very close to the truth. Not the literal truth, but the truth. For the dream of safety dies hard. I said, You know that dried-up cracker asshole is much too old for me.
Sharon laughed again. That is not, she said, the way he sees himself. But I guess I just would not be able to swallow the way he would see you. So, we can close the subject. You gonna marry Fonny. All right. When I really think about it.
And now she paused, and in a way she was no longer Sharon, my mother. But someone else, but that someone else was precisely my mother, Sharon.
I guess I'm real pleased.
She leaned back, arms folded, looking away, thinking ahead.
Yeah. He's real. He's a man.
He's not a man yet,
said Ernestine, but he's going to become a man. That's why you sitting there fighting them tears. Because that means that your youngest daughter is about to become a woman.
Oh, shut up,
Sharon said. Wish to God you'd get married to somebody. Then I'd be able to bug you half to death instead of the other way around.
You'd miss me, too, said Ernestine very quietly. But I don't think I'm ever going to marry. Some people do, you know, Mama. And some people don't. She stood up and kind of circled the room and sat down again. We could hear Fonny's voice and Joseph's voice in the other room, but we couldn't hear what they were saying. Also, we were trying very hard not to hear. Men are men, and sometimes they must be left alone, especially if you have the sense to realize that if they're locked in a room together where they may not especially want to be, they are locked in because of their responsibility for the women outside.
Well, I can understand that, said Sharon, very steadily and without moving.
The only trouble, Ernestine said, is that sometimes you would like to belong to somebody.
But, I said, I had not known I was going to say it.
It's very frightening to belong to somebody.
And perhaps until the moment I heard myself say this, I had not realized that this is true.
6 and 1, said Ernestine, and smiled, 6 in the other.
Joseph and Fonny came back from the other room.
Both of you are crazy, Joseph said, but there's nothing I can do about that.
He watched Fonny. He smiled, a smile both sweet and reluctant. Then he looked at me.
But Fonny's right. Somebody was bound to come along someday and take you away. I just didn't think it would happen so soon. But, like Fonny says, and it's true, you've always been together from childhood on. And you ain't children no more.
He took Fonny by the hand and led Fonny to me. And he took me by the hand and he pulled me to my feet. He put my hand in Fonny's hand.
Take care of each other, he said. You're going to find out that it's more than a notion.
Tears were standing in Fonny's eyes. He kissed my father. He let go my hand. He moved to the door.
I've got to get home, he said, and tell my daddy.
His face changed. He looked at me. He kissed me across the space dividing us.
He'll be mighty happy, he said.
He opened the door. He said to Joseph,
we'll be back here around 6 this evening, okay?
Okay, said Joseph,
and now he was smiling all over his face. Fonny went on out the door. 2 or 3 days later, Tuesday or Wednesday, we went downtown together again and started seriously looking around for our loft. And that was going to turn out to be a trip and a half. Mr. Hayward was in his office on the Monday, just as he had said he would be. I got there about 7:15, and Mama was with me. Mr. Hayward is about 37, I would guess, with gentle brown eyes and thinning brown hair. He's very, very tall, and he's big, and he's nice enough, or he seems nice enough, but I'm just not comfortable with him. I don't know if it's fair to blame him for this. I'm not really comfortable with anybody these days, and I guess I certainly wouldn't be comfortable with a lawyer. He stood up as we came in and put Mama in the big chair and me in the smaller one, and sat down again behind his desk.
How are you ladies today, Mrs. Rivers? How are you, Tish? Did you see Fonny?
Yes, at 6 o'clock.
And how was he?
That always seemed a foolish question to me. How is a man if he's fighting to get out of prison? But then, too, I had to force myself to see, from another point of view, that it was an important question. For one thing, it was a question I was living with, and for another, knowing how Fonny was might make a very important difference for Mr. Hayward, and help him with his case. But I also resented having to tell Mr. Hayward anything at all about Fonny. There was so much that I felt he should already have known. But maybe I'm being unfair about that, too. Well, let's put it this way, Mr. Hayward. He hates being in there, but he's trying not to let it break him.
When are we going to get him out? Asked Mama. Mr. Hayward looked from Mama to me and smiled, a painful smile, as though he had just been kicked in the balls. He said,
Well, as you ladies know, this is a very difficult case.
That's why my sister hired you, I said.
And you are beginning to feel now that her confidence was misplaced? He was still smiling.
He lit a cigar. No, I said. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't have dared to say that. Not yet, anyway, because I was afraid of having to look for another lawyer who might easily be worse.
We liked having Fonny around, Mama said, and we just kind of miss him. I can certainly understand that, he said, and I'm doing all I can to get him back to you just as fast as I can. But, as you ladies know, the very greatest difficulty has been caused by the refusal of Mrs. Rogers to reconsider her testimony. And now she has disappeared.
Disappeared? I shouted. How can she just disappear?
Tish, he said. This is a very big city, a very big country, even, for that matter. A very big world. People do disappear. I don't think that she has gone very far. They certainly do not have the means for a long journey. But her family may have returned her to Puerto Rico. In any case, in order to find her, I will need special investigators, and that means money, Mama said. Alas, said Mr. Hayward.
He stared at me from behind his cigar. An odd, expectant, surprisingly sorrowful look. I had stood up. Now I sat down. That filthy bitch, I said. That filthy bitch!
How much money? Mama asked. I am trying to keep it as low as possible, said Mr. Hayward, with a shy, boyish smile. But special investigators are special, I'm afraid, and they know it. If we're lucky, we'll locate Mrs. Rogers in a matter of days or weeks. If not, he shrugged, well, for the moment, let's just assume we'll be lucky. And he smiled again.
Puerto Rico, Mama said heavily. We don't know that she has returned there, Mr. Hayward said, but it is a very vivid possibility. Anyway, she and her husband disappeared some days ago from the apartment on Orchard Street, leaving no forwarding address. We have not been able to contact the other relatives, the aunts and uncles, who, anyway, as you know, have never been very cooperative.
But doesn't that make it look bad for her story? I asked, to just disappear like that? She's the key witness in this case.
Yes, but she is a distraught, ignorant Puerto Rican woman suffering from the after effects of rape. So her behavior is not incomprehensible, you see what I mean?
He looked at me hard, and his voice changed.
And she is only one of the key witnesses in this case, You have forgotten the testimony of Officer Bell. His was the really authoritative identification of the rapist. It is Bell who swears that he saw Fonny running away from the scene of the crime. And I have always been of the opinion, you will remember that we discussed this, that it is his testimony which Mrs. Rogers continually repeats.
If he saw Fonny at the scene of the crime, then why did he have to wait and come and get him out of the house?
Tish, Mama said. Tish? Then,
you mean, let me get you straight now, that it's that Officer Bell who tells her what to say? You mean that?
Yes, said Mr. Hayward.
I looked at Hayward. I looked around the room. We were way downtown near Broadway, not far from Trinity Church. The office was of dark wood, very smooth and polished. The desk was wide with two telephones. A button kept flashing. Hayward ignored it, watching me. There were trophies and diplomas on the walls, and a large photograph of Hayward Sr. On the desk, framed, were two photographs, one of his wife, smiling, and one of his two small boys. There was no connection between this room and me. Yet here I was. You're saying, I said, that there's no way of getting at the truth in this case.
No, I am not saying that.
He relit his cigar.
The truth of a case doesn't matter. What matters is who wins.
Cigar smoke filled the room.
I don't mean, he said carefully, that I doubt the truth. If I didn't believe in Fonny's innocence, I would never have taken the case. I know something about Officer Bell, who is a racist and a liar. I have told him that to his face, so you can feel perfectly free to quote me to anyone at any time you wish. And I know something about the DA in charge of this case, who is worse. Now, you and Fonny insist that you were together in the room on Bank Street along with an old friend, Daniel Carty. Your testimony, as you can imagine, counts for nothing, and Daniel Carty has just been arrested by the DA's office and is being held incommunicado. I have not been allowed to see him.
Now he rose and paced to the window.
What they are doing is really against the law, but Daniel has a record, as you know. They obviously intend to make him change his testimony. And I do not know this, but I am willing to bet that that is how and why Mrs. Rogers has disappeared.
He paced back to his desk and sat down.
So, you see?
He looked up at me.
I will make it as easy as I can, but it will still be very hard.
How soon do you need the money? Mama asked.
I have begun the operation already, he said, of tracing the JD. I will need the money as soon as you can get it. I will also force the DA's office to allow me to see Daniel Carty, but they will throw every conceivable obstacle in my way.
So we're trying, Mama said, to buy time.
Yes, he said.
Time. The word tolled like the bells of a church. Fonny was doing time. In 6 months' time, our baby would be here. Somewhere in time, Fonny and I had met. Somewhere in time, we had loved. Somewhere, no longer in time, but now totally at time's mercy, we loved. Somewhere in time, Fonny paced a prison cell, his hair growing nappier and nappier. Somewhere in time, he stroked his chin, itching for a shave. Somewhere in time, he scratched his armpits,
aching for a bath. Somewhere in time, he looked about him, knowing that he was being lied to, in time, with the connivance of time. In another time, he had feared life. Now he feared death. Somewhere in time. He awoke every morning with Tish on his eyelids and fell asleep every night with Tish tormenting his navel. He lived now in time with the roar and the stink and the beauty and the horror of innumerable men, and he had been dropped into this inferno in the twinkling of an eye. Time could not be bought. The only coin time accepted was life. Sitting on the leather arm of Mr. Hayward's chair, I looked through the vast window, way down on Broadway, and I began to cry.
"Tish," said Hayward helplessly.
Mama came and took me in her arms.
"Don't do us like that," she said. "Don't do us like that."
But I couldn't stop. It just seemed that we would never find Mrs. Rogers, that Bell would never change his testimony, that Daniel would be beaten until he changed his, and Fonny would rot in prison. Fonny would die there. And I could not live without Fonny.
"Tish," Mama said, "you a woman now. You got to be a woman. We are in a rough situation, but if you really want to think about it, ain't nothing new about that. That's just exactly, daughter, when you do not give up. You can't give up. We got to get Fonny out of there. I don't care what we have to do it. You understand me, daughter? This shit has been going on long enough. Now, you start thinking about it any other way, you're just going to make yourself sick. You can't get sick now. You know that. I'd rather for the state to kill him than for you to kill him. So come on now. We're going to get him out."
She moved away from me. I dried my eyes. She turned back to Hayward.
"You don't have an address for that child in Puerto Rico, do you?"
"Yes."
He wrote it out on a piece of paper and handed it to her.
"We're sending somebody down there this week."
Mama folded the piece of paper and put it in her purse.
"How soon do you think you'll be able to see Daniel?"
"I intend," he said, "to see him tomorrow, but I'm going to have to raise all kinds of hell to do it."
"Well," Mama said, "just as long as you do it."
She came back to me.
"We'll put our heads together at home, Mr. Hayward, and start working it on out. And I'll have Ernestine call you early tomorrow morning, all right?"
"That's fine. Please give Ernestine my regards."
He put down his cigar and came and put one clumsy hand on my shoulder.
"My dear Tish," he said, "please hold on. Please hold on. I swear to you that we will win, that Fonny will have his freedom. No, it will not be easy, but neither will it be as insurmountable as it seems to you today."
"Tell her," Mama said.
"Now, when I go to see Fonny, the first question he always asks is always about you. And I always say, 'Tish, she's fine.' But he watches my face to make sure I'm not lying, and I'm a very bad liar. I'm going to see him tomorrow. What shall I tell him?"
I said, "Tell him I'm fine."
"Do you think you can manage to give us a little smile to go with the message? I could carry it with me. He'd like that."
I smiled, and he smiled, and something really human happened between us for the first time.
He released my shoulder and walked over to Mama.
Could you have Ernestine call me around 10, or even earlier if possible? Otherwise, she may not be able to get me before 6.
Will do. And thank you very much, Mr. Hayward.
You know something? I wish you'd drop the mister.
Well, okay, Hayward. Call me Sharon.
That I will do, and I hope that we become friends out of all this.
I'm sure we will, Mama said. Thank you again. Bye now.
Goodbye. Don't forget what I said, Tish.
I won't. I promise. Tell Fanny I'm fine.
That's my girl. Or rather...
And he looked more boyish than ever.
Fanny's girl.
And he smiled. He opened the door for us. He said,
goodbye.
We said, goodbye. Fanny had been walking down 7th Avenue on a Saturday afternoon when he ran into Daniel again. They had not seen each other since their days in school. Time had not improved Daniel. He was still big, black, and loud. At the age of 23, he is a little older than Fanny. He was already running out of familiar faces. So they grabbed each other on the avenue after a moment of genuine shock and delight, howling with laughter, beating each other around the head and shoulders, children again. And though Fanny doesn't like bars, sat themselves down at the nearest one and ordered 2 beers.
Wow, what's happening?
I don't know which of them asked the question or which of them asked it first, but I can see their faces.
Why you asking me, man? Because like the man says about Mount Everest, you're there.
Where?
No kidding, man. How you making it? I got a slave for the Jew in the garment center pushing the hand truck, man, riding up and down in them elevators.
How your folks?
Oh, my daddy passed, man, a while ago. I'm still at the same place with my mama. Her varicose veins come down on her, though, so.
And Daniel looked down into his beer.
What you doing? I mean, now.
You mean this minute?
I mean, you any plans, man? You hung up? Or can you come on and hang out with me? I mean, right now.
I ain't doing nothing.
Bonnie swallowed his beer and paid the man. Come on. We got some beer at the pad.
Come on. You remember Tish?
Tish? Yeah, Tish. Skinny little Tish. My girl.
Skinny little Tish?
Yeah, she's still my girl. We're gonna get married, man. Come on, and let me show you the pad. And she'll fix us something to eat. Come on. I told you we got beer at the house.
And though he certainly shouldn't be spending the money, he pushes Daniel into a cab, and they roll on down to Bank Street, where I am not expecting them. But Fanny is big and cheerful, overjoyed, and the truth is that I recognize Daniel by the light in Fanny's eyes, for it is not so much that time has not improved him. I can see to what extent he has been beaten. This is not because I am perceptive, but because I am in love with Fanny. Neither love nor terror makes one blind. Indifference makes one blind. And I could not be indifferent to Daniel because I realized from Fanny's face how marvelous it was for him to have scooped up, miraculously, from the swamp waters of his past, a friend. But it means that I must go out shopping, and so out I go, leaving them alone. We have a record player. As I go out, Fanny is putting on Compared to What, and Daniel is squatting on the floor drinking beer.
So you really gonna get married? Daniel asks, both wistful and mocking. Well, yeah, we looking for a place to live. We looking for a loft because that don't cost no whole lot of bread, you know? And that way I can work without Tish being bugged to death. This room ain't big enough for one. Ain't no question about it being big enough for 2. And I got all my work here. And in the basement,
He is rolling a cigarette as he says this, for him and for Daniel, squatting opposite him.
They got lofts standing empty all over the east side, man, and don't nobody want to rent them except freaks like me. And they all fire traps, and some of them ain't even got no toilet, so you figure, like, finding a loft ain't gonna be no sweat.
He lights the cigarette, takes a drag, and hands it to Daniel.
But man, this country really do not like niggas. They do not like niggas so bad, man. They will rent to a leper first, I swear.
Daniel drags on the cigarette, hands it back to Fonny.
Tired old ladies kissing dogs, cries the record player,
who drags on it, takes a sip of his beer, and hands it back.
Sometimes Tish and I go together. Sometimes she goes alone. Sometimes I go alone. But it's always the same story, man.
He stands up.
And now I can't let Tish go alone no more because, Dig, last week we thought we had us a law. The cat had promised it to her. But he had not seen me. And he figures a black chick by herself way downtown looking for a loft. Well, he know he gonna make it with her. He thinks she's propositioning him. That's what he really thinks. And Tish comes to tell me just so proud and happy.
He sits down again.
And we go on over there. And when the cat sees me, he says there's been some great misunderstanding. He can't rent the loft. Because he's got all these relatives coming in from Romania like in half an hour, and he got to give it to them. Shit. And I told him he was full of shit, and he threatened to call the cops on my ass.
He takes the cigarette from Daniel.
I'm really going to have to try to figure out some way of getting some bread together and getting out of this fucking country.
How you going to do that?
I don't know yet, says Fonny. Tish can't swim.
He gives the cigarette back to Daniel, and they whoop and rock with laughter.
Maybe you could go first, says Daniel soberly.
The cigarette and the record are finished.
No, says Fonny. I don't think I want to do that.
Daniel watches him.
I'd be too scared.
Scared of what? Asks Daniel, though he really knows the answer to this question.
Just scared, says Fonny, after a long silence. Scared of what might happen to Tish? Daniel asks.
There's another long silence. Fonny is staring out the window. Daniel is staring at Fonny's back.
Yes, Fonny says finally. Then, scared of what might happen to both of us. Without each other. Like Tish ain't got no sense at all, man. She trusts everybody. She walked down the street swinging that little behind of hers, and she's surprised, man, when some cat tries to jump her. She don't see what I see.
And silence falls again. Daniel watching him, and Fonny says,
I know I might seem to be a weird kind of cat, but I got two things in my life, man. I got my wood and stone, and I got Tish. If I lose them, I'm lost. I know that. You know?
And now he turns to face Daniel.
Whatever's in me, I didn't put there, and I can't take it out.
Daniel moves to the pallet, leans against the wall.
I don't know if you so weird. I know you lucky. I ain't got nothing like that. Can I have another beer, man?
Sure, Bonnie says. And goes to open two more cans. He hands one to Daniel, and Daniel takes a long swallow before he says,
I just come out the slammer, baby. 2 years.
Bonnie says nothing, just turns and looks.
Daniel says nothing, swallows a little more beer. They still say, stole a car. Man, I can't even drive a car. And I tried to make my lawyer, but he was really their lawyer, Dig. He worked for the city. Prove that, but he didn't. And anyway, I wasn't in no car when they picked me up. But I had a little grass on me. I was on my stoop. And so they come and pick me up like that, you know? It was about midnight, and
They locked me up, and then the next morning they put me in the lineup, and somebody said it was me stole the car. That car I ain't seen yet. And so, you know, since I had that weed on me, they had me anyhow. And so they said if I would plead guilty, they'd give me a lighter sentence. If I didn't plead guilty, they'd throw me the book. Well,
he sips his beer again.
I was alone, baby. Wasn't nobody. And so I entered the guilty plea. 2 years.
He leans forward, staring at Fonny.
But then it sounded a whole lot better than the marijuana charge.
He leans back and laughs and sips his beer and looks up at Fonny.
It wasn't. I let them fuck over me because I was scared and dumb, and I'm sorry now.
He is silent. Then,
2 years.
By the balls, says Fonny.
Yes, says Daniel, after the loudest and longest silence either of them has ever known.
When I come back in, they are both sitting there, a little high, and I say nothing. And I move about in the tiny space of the kitchenette as quietly as I can. Fonny comes in for a moment and rubs up against me from behind and hugs me and kisses the nape of my neck. Then he returns to Daniel.
How long you been out?
About 3 months.
He leaves the pallet, walks to the window.
Man, it was bad, very bad. And it's bad now. Maybe I'd feel different if I had done something and got caught, but I didn't do nothing. They were just playing with me, man, because they could. And I'm lucky it was only 2 years, you dig? Because they can do with you whatever they want. Whatever they want. And they dogs, man. I really found out in the slammer what Malcolm and them cats was talking about. The white man's got to be the devil. He sure ain't a man. Some of the things I saw, baby, I'll be dreaming about until the day I die.
Fonny puts one hand on Daniel's neck. Daniel shudders. Tears stream down his face.
I know, Fonny says gently. But try not to let it get to you too tough. You out now. It's over. You young.
Man, I know what you're saying, and I appreciate it, but you don't know. The worst thing, man, the worst thing is that they can make you so fucking scared. Scared, man. Scared.
Fonny says nothing, simply stands there with his hand on Daniel's neck. I yell from the kitchen.
You cats hungry?
Yeah. Fonny yells back, we starving. Move it.
Daniel dries his eyes and comes to the door of the kitchenette and smiles at me.
It's nice to see you, Tish. You sure ain't gained no weight, have you?
You hush. I'm skinny because I'm poor.
Well, I sure don't know why you didn't pick yourself a rich husband. You ain't never gonna gain no weight now.
Well,
if you skinny, Daniel, you can move faster, and when you're in a tight place, you got a better chance of getting out of it. You see what I mean?
You sound like you got it figured. You learn all that from Fonny?
I learned some things from Fonny, but I also have a swift, natural intelligence. Haven't you been struck by it?
Tish, I've been struck by so many things that I really have not had time to do you justice.
You're not the only one. And I can't really blame you. I'm so remarkable, I sometimes have to pinch myself. Daniel laughs.
I'd like to see that. Where?
Fonny mutters.
She's so remarkable, I sometimes have to go upside her head.
He beat you too? Ah, what can I do?
All my life is just despair, but I don't care. Suddenly we are singing. When he takes me in his arms, the world is bright, all right.
What's the difference if I say I'll go away, when I know I'll come back on my knees someday? For whatever my man is, I am his forevermore. Then we are laughing. Daniel sobers, looking within, suddenly very far away. Poor Billy, he says. They beat the living crap out of her, too.
Man, Fonny says, we just have to move it from day to day. If you think too much about it, you really are fucked. Can't move at all.
Let's eat, I say. Come on. I have prepared what I know Fonny likes. Ribs and cornbread and rice with gravy and green peas. Fonny puts on the record player, low. Marvin Gaye's What's Going On.
Maybe Tish can't gain no weight, says Daniel after a moment, but you sure will. You folks mind if I drop by more often, say, around this time?
Feel free, says Fonny cheerfully and winks at me.
Tish ain't very good looking, but she can sure get the pots together.
I'm happy to know I have some human use, I tell him, and he winks at me again and starts chewing on a rib. Fonny chews on the rib and watches me, and in complete silence, without moving a muscle, we are laughing with each other. We are laughing for many reasons. We are together somewhere where no one can reach us, touch us, joined. We are happy, even, that we have food enough for Daniel, who eats peacefully, not knowing that we are laughing, but sensing that something wonderful has happened to us, which means that wonderful things happen, and that maybe something wonderful will happen to him. It's wonderful, anyway, to be able to help a person to have that feeling. Daniel stays with us till midnight. He's a little afraid to leave. Afraid, in fact, to hit those streets. And Fonny realizes this and walks him to the subway. Daniel, who cannot abandon his mother, yet longs to be free to confront his life, is terrified at the same time of what that life may bring, is terrified of freedom, and is struggling in a trap. And Fonny, who is younger, struggles now to be older in order to help his friend toward his deliverance. Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? And why not every man? The song is old, the question unanswered. On their walk that night, and many nights thereafter, Daniel tried to tell Fonny something about what had happened to him in prison. Sometimes he was at the house, and so I heard it too. Sometimes he and Fonny were alone. Sometimes when Daniel spoke, he cried. Sometimes Fonny held him. Sometimes I did. Daniel brought it out, or forced it out, or tore it out of himself as though it were torn, twisted, chilling metal, bringing with it his flesh and his blood. He tore it out of himself like a man trying to be cured.
You don't know what's happening to you at first. No way to know it. They come and got me off my stoop and they searched me. When I thought about it later, I realized that I didn't really know why. I was always on that stoop, me and the other cats. And they was always passing by. And while I wasn't never on no shit, they knew some of the other cats has to be. You know they knew it. And they could see the dude scratching and nodding. I think they dug that. When I thought about it later, I thought to myself, the motherfuckers really dig that shit. They go on into headquarters and report, everything's cool, sir. We escorted the French Connection while he made his rounds and the shit's been delivered and the niggas is out of it. But this night I was by myself, about to go on in. And they stopped the car and yelled at me and pushed me into the hallway and searched me. You know how they do it. I don't know. But Fonny nods, his face still, his eyes very dark.
and I had just picked up this grass. It was in my ass pocket. And so they pulled it out, man. Do they love to pat your ass? And one of them give it to the other one, and one of them handcuffed me and pushed me into the car. And I had known it was going to come to that. Maybe I was a little high. Maybe I hadn't had time to think. But, baby, when that man put his handcuffs on me and pushed me down the steps and on into the car, and then that car started moving, I wanted to scream for my mama. And then I started getting scared because she can't hardly do nothing for herself. And she'd start to worrying about me and wouldn't nobody know where I was. They took me down to the precinct and they booked me on a narcotics charge. And they took everything I had off of me and I started to ask, can I make a phone call? And then I realized that I didn't really have nobody to call except my mama. And who's she gonna call this hour of night? I just hoped she was sleeping, you know? Like she had just figured that I was out late. And by the time she woke up in the morning and realized I wasn't there, then maybe I'd have figured out something. They put me in this little cell with about 4 or 5 other cats. They was just nodding and farting. And I sat there and tried to get my mind together. Because what the fuck am I going to do? I ain't got nobody to call. I really don't. Except maybe that Jew I work for. He a nice enough dude, but man, he ain't hardly going to dig it. What I'm really trying to figure is how I can get somebody else to call my mama. Somebody who's cool, who can cool her. Somebody who can do something. But I can't think of nobody. Morning came and they put us in the wagon. There's this old white motherfucker they picked up off the Bowery, I guess. He done vomited all over himself and he's looking down at the floor and he's singing. He can't sing, but he sure is stinking. And man, I'm sure grateful I ain't on no shit because now one of the brothers has started to moan. He got his arms wrapped around himself and sweat is starting to pour off that cat like water down a scrubbing board. I ain't much older than he is and I sure wish I could help him, but I know I can't do nothing. And I think to myself, now the cops who put him in this wagon know that this dude is sick. I know they know it. He ain't supposed to be in here and him not hardly much more than a kid. But the mothers who put him in this wagon, man, they was coming in their pants while they did it. I don't believe there's a white man in this country, baby, who can't even get his dick hard without he hear some nigger moan. Well, we get on down there and I still ain't thought of nobody to call. I want to shit and I want to die, but I know I can't do neither. I figure they'll let me shit when they get ready. In the meantime, I just got to hold it best I can. And it's just pure foolishness for me to think of wanting to die because they can kill me anytime they want to. And maybe I'll die today. Before I shit. And then I think of my mama again. I know she worried by now. Sometimes Fonny held him. Sometimes I did. Sometimes he stood at the window with his back to us. I can't really tell you much more about it. Maybe there's a whole lot of shit that I won't never be able to tell nobody. They had me on the grass, and so they nailed me on the car. That car I ain't seen yet. I guess they just happened to need a car thief that day. Sure wish I knew whose car it was. I hope it wasn't no black dude's car, though. Then, sometimes Daniel would grin. Sometimes he would dry his eyes. We would eat and drink together. Daniel was trying very hard to get past something. Something unnameable. He was trying as hard as a man can try. And sometimes I held him. Sometimes Fonny. We were all he had. On the Tuesday after the Monday that I saw Hayward, I saw Fonny at the 6 o'clock visit. I had never seen him so upset before. What the fuck we gonna do about Mrs. Rogers? Where the fuck did she go? I don't know, but we'll find her. How you gonna find her?
We're sending people to Puerto Rico. We think that's where she went.
And suppose she went to Argentina or Chile or China.
Fanny, please. How's she gonna get that far?
They can give her the money to go anywhere.
Who?
The DA's office, that's who.
Fanny,
you don't believe me? You don't think they can do it?
I don't think they have.
How you gonna get the money to find her?
We're all working, all of us.
Yeah. My daddy's working in the garment center. You're working in a department store. Your daddy's working on the waterfront.
Fanny, listen.
Listen to what? What we gonna do about that fucking lawyer? He don't give a shit about me. He don't give a shit about nobody. You want me to die in here? You know what's going on in here? You know what's happening to me? To me in here?
Fanny, Fanny, Fanny.
I'm sorry, baby. I don't mean none of that for you. I'm sorry. I love you, Tish. I'm sorry.
I love you, Fanny. I love you.
How's the baby coming?
It's growing. It'll start showing more next month. We stared at each other.
Get me out of here, baby. Get me out of here, please.
I promise. I promise. I promise.
Don't cry. I'm sorry I yelled. I wasn't yelling at you, Tish.
I know.
Please don't cry. Please don't cry. It's bad for the baby.
All right.
Give us a smile, Tish.
Is that all right?
You can do better than that.
Is this better?
Yeah. Give us a kiss.
I kissed the glass. He kissed the glass.
You still love me?
I'll always love you, Fanny.
I love you. I miss you. I miss everything about you. I miss everything we had together. Everything we did together, walking and talking and making love. Oh, baby, get me out of here.
I will. Hold on.
I promise. Later.
Later. He followed the guard into the unimaginable inferno, and I stood up, my knees and elbows shaking, to cross the Sahara again. That night I dreamed. I dreamed all night. I had terrible dreams. In one of these dreams, Fanny was driving a truck, a great big truck, very fast, too fast, down the highway, and he was looking for me, but he didn't see me. I was behind the truck, calling out his name, but the roar of the motor drowned my voice. There were two turnings off this highway, and they both looked exactly alike. The highway was on a cliff above the sea. One of the turnings led to the driveway of our house. The other led to the cliff's edge, and a drop straight down to the sea. He was driving too fast, too fast. I called his name as loud as I could, and as he began to turn the truck, I screamed again and woke up. The light was on, and Sharon was standing above me. I cannot describe her face. She had brought in a cold, wet towel, and she wiped my brow and my neck. She leaned down and kissed me. Then she straightened and looked into my eyes.
I know I can't help you very much right now. God knows what I wouldn't give if I could. But I know about suffering, if that helps. I know that it ends. I ain't gonna tell you no lies, like it always ends for the better. Sometimes it ends for the worse. You can suffer so bad that you can be driven to a place where you can't ever suffer again.
and that's worse. She took both my hands and held